That was by special request. Thank you so much, Rick. A powerful, powerful song. I have to take just a moment because I think that seldom has one bouquet of flowers represented so much happiness. And the bouquet here today, flower arrangement, is celebrating 37 years of happiness, Daryl and Kathy Payne, back here. And it is also celebrating little Jackson, that's Eric and Shannon's little one. And Jeff, where's the rest of yours? It's celebrating Jeff and Audrey's twins, Andrew and Lauren. And what a wonderful, wonderful occasion. Thank you so much. The year was 1772, and a completely converted John Newton decided that he would put into words the best that he could his feelings when he gave his heart totally to Jesus Christ. And so he did in what he called faith, review, and expectation. And of course, we know it today as Amazing Grace. How sweet the sound. Amazing Grace. And of course, since that time, it has probably become the most popular song in history. It has brought hope to those who are helpless, to those who are without hope. It has melted the hearts of even the worst of men. It was sung by both sides in the Civil War, and it was even sung by the Cherokee Indians as a requiem. It was also used to gain courage in the time of the civil rights movement here in the States, and Martin Luther King Jr. used Amazing Grace when he tried to share his dream. It was also sung when Nelson Mandela was freed from prison and when the Berlin Wall came tumbling down. And then after September 11, 2001, it brought comfort to an entire nation. And this year, on February 18, it was what inspired Amazing Grace Sunday, when across North America and through the UK, churches, thousands of churches, celebrated 200 anniversary of the UK being freed from slavery. One of the greatest moments in the history of the British Empire to be free from slavery. It's a powerful, powerful song. And I think that the Lord must have sent his spirit to inspire John Newton when he wrote that song. John Newton was a mentor to another very, very famous individual whom you and I don't hear that much about, but he was a mentor to a young boy by the name of William Wilberforce. In fact, Wilberforce looked upon Newton as like a father, and Newton looked on Wilberforce like a son. The two of them grew very, very close over the years. And William Wilberforce played such a key role in the liberation of the UK from slavery. Eric Metaxas, in his new book, really a great and thrilling book, entitled Amazing Grace, which is now a motion picture, tells the story of William Wilberforce. William grew up in the home of very wealthy people. He had everything in this life that he could ever desire, and And you know, back in those days, they would go to Cambridge when they were 14 or 15 years of age. And Wilberforce, his friends, one of his best friends all of his life was William Pitt, one of the youngest prime ministers of the UK. And Wilberforce himself was serving at a very young age in the parliament. But even though the preaching and teaching of John Wesley and Whitefield and others had their impact upon a very, very young William, he still had all of this wealth and all of this time, and he and William Pitt and their other friends lived a very carefree lifestyle. They went everywhere, and they partied, and they partied, and they partied. Well, as William was serving in Parliament, his conscience began to bother him. And he began to think about some of those sermons that John Wesley had preached. He began to think about how he was spending his money and his time. And he decided, you know, where can I go to open up my heart? And he thought of John Newton, who was an elderly man. And so he made an appointment to go and see John Newton. And it was a secret appointment. He didn't want anyone else to know about it. And when you read it, you think of Nicodemus going to see Jesus. And so he went to see John Newton, and he opened up his heart. And just like Nicodemus, he made a decision to turn his life totally over to Jesus Christ and to leave politics behind. He thought that that had to be a part of it, leaving the politics. Well, when he shared this with William Pitt, the prime minister, and with John Newton, William Pitt was very disappointed, and John Newton writes a letter to him that is in the book, and he encourages him. He said, you know, you don't have to leave politics. You can remain in your position and still serve the Lord. And so William decided to remain in his position to serve the Lord. And it was that decision in 1785, when William Force was 25 years of age, his decision to give his heart to the Lord, that had such a tremendous, tremendous impact upon him. When he returned to the House of Commons in 1786, he was a totally different person. Totally different person. And in his own writings, he called this his great change, his conversion. He referred to it as the great change in his life. And there were two changes that were immediately evident in his life. And the first had to do with his wealth, his money. And the second had to do with his time. He felt like those two things so controlled his life. And so one of the first things that he did was to tell the Lord that he knew that he had been given all of this in order to reach out and help others. And so he did the unexpected. He sold this beautiful mansion. And then concerning time, he said, to endeavor from this moment to amend my plan for time. I hope to live more than heretofore to God's glory and my fellow creatures' good. And that's the way William Wilberforce lived. Without a doubt, his conversion in 1785, which he called the Great Change, was the central and most important event in all of his life. What about you and me? Do you look back upon that experience of giving your heart totally to Jesus Christ as the most important event in your entire life? Well, it was that event that gave him the power, that gave him the determination for the next 20 years to fight for the liberation of the slaves in the UK. And he fought for it. and he lost, and he fought for it, and he lost, and he fought for it, and he lost, until in 1807, he finally won the battle. And I would suggest to you this morning that it was one of the greatest events in the history of the UK. Freedom from slavery in 1807. Do you know what that is like? Do you know what it is like to be a slave? I dare say that every single one of us here this morning knows what it's like to be a slave to sin, a slave to sin. And you know, Jesus Christ did not just die upon the cross to free a certain country from slavery or a certain race from slavery. He died upon that cross for an entire world, for every single one of us here today. He died for you and for me to free us completely from slavery. And today we are to celebrate that sacrifice and his grace that has set us free. Amazing grace. How sweet the sound. His death and his resurrection makes that big change in your life and my life possible. And as Rick sang, the chains are gone. When we turn our lives over to Jesus Christ, that is what we discover. The chains are gone. And this morning we are celebrating by partaking of the bread and the grape juice, God's grace that has set us free. It should be one of the most joyful occasions every quarter in our experience, celebrating what Jesus Christ has done for us. Before we partake of that bread and grape juice together, we invite all who have accepted Jesus Christ as their Savior to participate. We do not practice a closed communion. We practice an open communion. Everyone is welcome to join in, partaking together if you have accepted Jesus Christ as your Savior. But before we enter into that experience, we follow the example of Jesus Christ over there in John 13 in the ordinance of humility, the foot washing service, which is a symbol of a cleansing from sin. A symbol of cleansing from sin. And this morning, the ladies are going to participate in that in the youth chapel. And men, because of the remodeling, the men will be in the junior room over to my left, and the married couples and families in the early teen room, and just across the hall in the pre-cradle room. If it is inconvenient for you to participate in this, we'd like to invite you to just remain in the sanctuary. There will be music for your meditation and pictures on the screen. I'd like to invite you, as you conclude this part of the service, that you return to the sanctuary and just reverently sit here, contemplating and meditating upon what God's grace has done in your life. Think back to that great change in your life and what a difference it has made to you. And so at this time, we'd like to invite you to separate for the ordinance of humility.